CliffCentral.com.
A little while ago, CliffCentral.com launched a brand new show featuring someone who we've known for a long time and who's a member of our family, Lerato Shabalala, who has returned to the fold. And of course, she's very well known from the Urban Miss column back in the Sunday Times to being the former editor of True Love magazine, her own book, which we discussed not so long ago, The Way I See It, and Living It Up with Lerato, which is every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on cliffcentral.com, which is brought to you by Raleigh Properties. Now, Raleigh Mampwele is the other guest that we want to meet this morning, and I'm not going to be unfair, Lerato, if I spend more time talking to Raleigh than you, because
I'm used to talking.
I get to see you all the time.
Yeah.
And you've had Raleigh a couple of times on your show. I remember the first time I heard of him and I met him through you. I discovered the story of this man. You know, a lot of people like to throw around the word entrepreneur. You know, they will say, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. They have these rubbish little businesses where they have sold 10 paper clips and they call themselves an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The way this guy talks and the kinds of things he's achieved in his life, it's nothing short of the perfect example of entrepreneurship.
Totally, totally.
And there's so many things about his story that I think are inspiring for young people who are thinking of going into their own businesses, thinking of starting their own thing. He said something the other day, and it's been bugging me for like weeks, Raleigh. You put something in my head. You said you don't have to have a lot of money
to make money in property. So that's what actually made me pay attention to Raleigh, because you know me, I was like, oh, BS, there's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
And once he said that, I wanted to spend as much time interrogating it with him. And I think it's his tagline. I think it's your tagline,
yeah.
Raleigh.
Yeah, you do not need money to make money in real estate.
Well, you got to teach us how, and hopefully by the end of this discussion, or at very least the series on Living It Up with Lerato, we will have figured out something to do with your mind. To you, it's very clear. To us, it's still not 100%. So first of all, congratulations on joining our stable of talent here and on your show with Lerato, because the number of times you have been on, you've added tremendous value. I mean, things about home loans that I had no idea about, things about interest rates, things about how you can fix up properties, turning a little four-bedroom in the townships into something amazing. And maintaining the character of some of these houses, which I think comes from, in your case, a real love of property.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Gareth. And thanks for having me on your show.
Sure. It's a pleasure. It's long overdue. The only reason we haven't had it sooner is because you've been so busy.
Yeah, he's never here. In fact, he's leaving just tonight to take his kids on holiday. But Bradley, I was for people who don't understand, what does that mean that you don't need money to make money in real estate?
Yeah, well, basically, I started at the age of 21. I bought a new development in Midrand. For his amount, which I didn't have in my pocket or in my balance sheet. So just to give an example, I bought the development for 21 million rand at 21.
And, seems like a very sort of fortuitous, it's almost predestined thing.
Yeah.
21 mil at 21?
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, but what I knew was that there was a demand of properties in Midrand during those times. So I was an estate agent, and the developer wanted me to sell 60 units of townhouses. And what I then did, I said to him, look, I've done my own competitive market analysis, and I think that the property will definitely be worth more than 21 million rand. Can I then increase the prices? He said, no, Raleigh, I'm not interested. I've done my numbers. I'm happy to go ahead on the market for 21 million rand. I then came up with an idea, because I knew there was a gap of a clear good 6 million rand difference between what he's asking and what the market will be willing to pay. And then I made an offer. I had 2, 3, 4 weekends where I sat in an umbrella next to the new development that we were selling. And I called a few of my friends, one of them was Yvonne Chaka Chaka, and other people to say, look, I can help you to be able to own a couple of properties with one salary. That was during the good times where you could actually get 4 home loans at a go with one salary. So I empowered other people to be able to buy 3, 4, 5 townhouses. And within a space of 30 days, I had sold all the properties, and I had more than 26 million rand and worth of guarantees. And I went to an attorney who then obviously created a, what we call a one bank guarantee for 21 million rand. And at 21, I had made myself 6 million rand. That is just a typical example of saying you do not need money to make money in real estate.
It's called gearing.
It's called, well, definitely it's the art of gearing. So that's the beauty about real estate. So if you're in a position where you can be able to capitalize on the income that you have, you'll then be able to borrow more. And we can talk more about that.
Can we just start at the beginning of your story? I know for a lot of people, they may have already heard this when Lerato gave you your introduction in the beginning. Mm. But I think for a lot of people, there are loads of South Africans who are talented, who are very intelligent, who have opportunities thrown in front of them all the time, and they don't see it. They focus on all the reasons why they are not successful. They focus on all the reasons why nobody seems to give them a leg up.
Yeah.
You didn't have any advantages. You were a hardworking guy. I mean, you started off selling like Boerewors rolls next to the side of the road.
Yeah. So basically, I was doing my studying for my BCom with UNISA during studying part time and I used to drop off my younger sisters at school in Fourways, and I saw an opportunity during lunchtime when I drive back with them, stuck in a little bit of traffic, and maybe I haven't had lunch. And I said, well, it would be nice. This was during the time we didn't have a lot of drive-thrus then, like where you could just drive to McDonald's or so. I decided, because I was a dreamer, and I just thought I need to do something for myself to have money to continue to pay for my school fees and pour petrol for, because I was also selling, just starting to become an assistant real estate agent. And I thought, let me start this. And I went and I bought, remember I went to Macro and I bought a little braai stand and I started to sell Boerewors rolls. That didn't last too long because obviously I kept on dreaming bigger. And then I left one of my younger sisters when she finished her matric to be there, and then we end up hiring somebody to sell the Boerewors rolls. But that's just the background. But I think most entrepreneurs that I've spoken to that have done well in mining and other sectors, they'll even tell you that they were selling sweets at school while other students were doing other things.
I mean, this is the difference between you and the people who wish they were successful. Because to you, it never occurred that this was a job beneath you to sit there making Boerewors rolls.
Yes.
I mean, for most of us, Lerato, and I don't think I speak just for me, there are a lot of young people, and I'm not even that young anymore, who imagine that somehow they're just going to climb that ladder of success.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't have to start off doing horrible jobs.
No, they're going to start with a corner office with a view of Joburg, okay? And they will have exec in the title.
And social media, this stuff does not help because it shows people having their best lives.
That's
it doesn't
true.
Show the stuff that they're doing to get there.
Yeah, there is no paying of dues. There is a sense of instant
gratification
CEO-ness.
And power. I was going to ask you, you started off then in real estate as an estate agent, another non-glamorous job.
Yeah.
Commission-based.
You don't earn big money. What you earn is only what you sell.
Yeah.
And you have to work for someone else, and it's horrible hours while everyone else is enjoying their Sundays. You have to show off houses and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You sit under an umbrella with pamphlets.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy stuff. So you're quite right, Gareth. I mean, maybe it's about time that maybe entrepreneurs should be featured as and when they start in their career, because what generally happens is that you work hard for a good 10. I've been in the industry now for 17 years, and, people see the things now sometimes, and actually you end up being in trouble. I mean, the other time I went to a funeral and, people didn't know about me, and I happened to have come with a nice car there, and journalists wanted to write about this because they're so used to. And when I told the journalist my story, they said, listen, I happened to have come to this funeral with this fancy car because, that's what I wanted to come with. But you don't need to go and badmouth me, so because guys are used to.
Are you talking about jealousy?
Well, it's not necessarily jealousy, but I think people are used to instant success, as you were saying. Right. So when they see a black person maybe driving a fancy car, they think, well, you just got a tender last week and everything.
Yeah, and they hear the 26 million without realizing that the Boerewors source and the estate agency of life came first.
So, but the point I wanted to make, Gareth, is that it's important to probably showcase when entrepreneurs are starting up and how long it takes.
But this is also, there's a uniquely difficult situation for black entrepreneurs to deal with. And you've just hit on it now. Like among white and black people, when they see a black person doing really well suddenly,
who is
they immediately get suspicious.
Yeah.
They don't investigate the backstory. They don't look at it necessarily. They go, ah, must be some kind of corruption.
Yeah.
So, okay, what a horrible starting point in people's minds. You know, they always say that the first impression lasts.
Yeah.
If that's how people feel about so many successful young black people, it's no wonder that they can't get a leg up and they can't get ahead from there on. Because people will go, oh, well, he must have got that money from government.
Exactly.
No, you're quite right. But
it's
it's horrible. But I think also, maybe then the entrepreneurs out there should actually showcase the ones that have actually did it. Because there's nothing wrong actually to do business with government. But
The
ones that also have just done it in the private sector, I mean, I think it's important for them to showcase that so that they become role model to other entrepreneurs because it's more sustainable. If you talk of the guys like Vusi, you know, he always speaks about black solutions for black problems.
Oh, Vusi Tembagwayo, yes.
And I think it's right on point. We need to be able to be in a position where we're starting to have businesses that are created by black entrepreneurs as well in the country, or any entrepreneurs for the fact, new things. I mean, if you look at the banks, sometimes they think differently. I mean, I'm with a certain bank, and I won't mention name. I see Lorato was also on Twitter talking about banks, and she didn't mention names, but I'm not going to mention them either. But I wanted to tell you that I was there, and they said, well, Riley, we see you got a little bit of this that you can invest. And I said, yes, do that. And they wanted to tell me where they're going to invest the money. And then I asked them, which side, where are you going to invest? And they said to me, well, we're going to invest with this group and this group. And none of those groups were, and these were property groups, were not black owned.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked them, and I'll mention this company. I said, where is the Rebosses, which is a black owned, first black owned listed company?
Mm.
And that specific bank said, well, they're a bit of a high risk. We are not investing there. So what that means, it means that black people will need, this is a listed company that is owned by CISA, which is the first black owned real estate company that is listed in the JSE. And what I learned from that is that there's a lot of money that has been invested in the country by even black churches and black entrepreneurs and all those tenderpreneurs that, you know, as we call them. But that money actually doesn't go to reinvest in some of the black businesses.
Mm.
So what needs to happen? We need to be able to understand when there's a new bank, like now there's a new bank called Vendor Bank.
Mm.
We should be supporting those type of banks because they will go all the way and look at entrepreneur and actually invest in that business.
Yeah.
I know they've given Jacob Zuma a home loan, so we won't go there. But again, they gave a home loan in the rural areas.
Mm.
You know, so
which people desperately need. And
which
and
people
I
need.
I want to talk to you about that in a second because there's obviously a revolution in property that has to happen in this country.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, that $6 million you made off your first deal in 21. You put that straight back into property.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you see, for most of us, you'd go,
I have mama made it. Okay.
I mean,
Up Bentley and tell them I am ready. Oh my God.
But you put that straight back into more property.
Yes. Yeah. So I reinvested. I mean, I started to buy properties, land, and obviously I was a young person at 21 and I had a bit of fun as well. I bought myself a little small car.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that real estate is one of those industries that actually naturally help you to be disciplined, because you will know that if I buy the property today for R1 million, in 10 years' time, it'll be worth X amount. So based on the fact that I was in the real estate industry, I automatically invested in the real estate industry and bought more land and started to get involved in property development as well. So,
but it's not just you had money and you made more money. I mean, you have to be really smart about this. So you knew that investing in certain properties would get you a higher return.
Hmm.
You also watched when it was a buyer's or seller's market.
Yes.
You paid attention to what the value of the actual place was, because you develop a keen eye for this stuff. Like you can walk into a development that's just started. I'll bet you you'll be able to say, this is the maximum I'd be willing to pay for this.
Yeah.
That's just a skill you learn in experience, right?
Yeah. No, definitely. And, so we speak with Lorato during our podcast, and we always say, the gearing is important. So one of the things that happen is that when you've got a bit of an income, you start saying to yourself, well, I've got an extra 200,000 at work or something. You can use that money to be able to, I mean, let me just give you an example. So We bought a new development recently, about 2 months ago, at Waterfall. It's a huge office park that we bought now for just under 400 million. We didn't have 400 million, but what we did, we had a bit of capital which could be able to give us a 10% deposit.
Mm.
With that 10% deposit, we managed to acquire 400 million rand asset by putting down a 10% deposit and went to the bank and said, we've got a national tenant that will be able to rent the building for 10 years. Based on that, we don't have the 400 million, but we have the 10%. Can the bank give us the balance? They give us the balance of the money so that we can put a national tenant there. So that's what we mean by the art of gearing. So one of the things that we did during those time, when after I sold that development, I took the money to put deposit into small other townhouses, and some of them we kept till now. And when we sell, we then manage to be able to have a bit of cash flow to be able to get into this type of opportunities. So gearing in real estate is the number one rule that you must work on, if not after the location.
So we know that only about 2% of the world's population actually own property across the whole world.
Sure.
So it's a very tiny percentage of all humans who will ever own the land that they live in or use.
Yeah.
And in South Africa, we've obviously got a very unequal distribution of land.
Yeah.
What we also have is we have massive amounts of rural land which are run by
tribal
or traditional structures.
Mm.
And a lot of people will never get the title deed to land that they actually already occupy and should have.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
This to me seems like a no-brainer. And all it is paperwork.
It's like paperwork.
No one else is claiming that property except the family who live on it. Mm. No one else has a claim on that property except the family who live on it. If they had that, they could do what you're talking about. They could take loans against that property to build a small business, to buy more property, to do things with. It is the key for rural and urban populations to immediately emancipate themselves from the slavery. Isn't it obvious?
Completely. I mean, that was actually part of the reasons why I wanted to start the podcast. I mean, like, I think one of the things you hear a lot in South Africa at the moment, the narrative, as the woke kids like to say, is, oh, bring back our land. Hashtag bring back our land. And the thing is, what I wanted to say to people is, it's not enough to want the land back. Once you've got it, what do you do with it? Well, how do you acquire it even?
That's fine, but even just, this is just paperwork.
Yes, exactly.
There should be nothing to stop this from happening.
Exactly.
You know, Gareth,
imagine how many rallies there could be out there who could start with the property they already are living in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Gareth, I think you are hired. I mean, now you're a serious property expert. You know, that's a good point you raised. So, if you really think about it, this can create a lot of jobs as well. Because what will happen, the paperwork that you're mentioning, it means that somebody has to go and do the town planning. So you've got a lot of town planners that are qualified, who are not employed. They could actually go and start actually go on Google Earth and Google Maps and check where the homelands are and actually start rezoning that. You then need engineers to be able to put services.
Mm.
You need the architects to start designing the urban areas and all of those things, urban design. So you can employ so many people. Then you need to go to the deeds office. So can you imagine the workload at the deeds office, where you've got millions of title deeds that are going to be issued to the individuals? You're going to have to hire more people to
but
work at
creates,
the deeds office. It creates a lot of opportunities.
And
at the end game is that it's going to be somebody with a title deed that can go and actually get a 400,000, 500,000 bond and use that money to start a business or to invest in real estate.
But these people shouldn't have to pay for the property they're already on. I mean, whether it's a tiny little shack you've got in an informal settlement or because
a homestead.
What else is that property for?
Mm.
It's not going to be used for anything else. It should be just given to whoever's occupying it at the moment. I know that's controversial.
No, it's true.
This is where I don't buy all this stuff about how we need to expropriate certain. There's also plenty of land that government
currently,
owns.
Yeah.
Government owns so much land, you know.
Yeah.
You look at the registry.
Yeah.
There's just huge tracts of land that aren't being used that could be turned into industrial property, that could be turned into residential, commercial property, and that young black people could also find as their space to just take some dignity back.
That's true.
From the system. If you own something, if you can even show a piece of paper that you own 5 square meters, it's better than owning nothing.
Yeah, totally.
No, that's true, and you take pride in that. I mean, you know, you'll think twice to drop a piece of paper on the floor, on the ground, if you know that this is your area and this is where you invested. And I think that's what's happening in Johannesburg Central. people don't own those properties, you know, and based on that, they just feel, well, what does it mean?
Can use it and abuse it. Yeah. It's like a rental car.
Yep. Yeah.
Nobody respects a rental
no,
car.
No, not really.
But so, in the big picture,
yeah,
someone like you is positioned very well in this country at the moment to also help young, aspirational, middle-class black people often to acquire their first property.
Mm. Yeah.
And your advice to them, and I've heard this being discussed on the podcast already, your advice to them is to start as early as you can. Why pay someone else's rent?
Yes. Yeah. So we've got a couple of things that we've sort of done. Obviously, as part of the little success that I have, I've created a learnership called the Rally Mampilu Learnership. And the aim of the learnership is actually to bring new blood into the old vein of real estate. And one of the things that we do is that we sponsor people that want to study real estate. So in the last 12 months, we've taken a good 12 students out to go study at the universities, because fortunately now there are universities that actually are offering real estate courses. So we spent a quarter of a million rand to take the students to go and study real estate, and some of them are going to be in fact, we started doing this a while ago, and we've got graduates that are coming up in the next year or so. And part of the things that we've done also is that we've got companies, just in Midrand alone, we've created about 4 to 6 proper real estate companies from both the young black and the young South Africa. We've got a guy called Gordon Rose, fantastic young guy who came and joined our company as an estate agent, and he was just a dreamer as well. And now he's running his own business in Midrand. But when it comes to the side of personal buying your own properties, we always encourage that, because it definitely doesn't make sense for you to be renting if you can own the property. So, I think sometime last week or so, she was discussing the issue of home loans, and we were saying that the banks must come to the party as well, because what happened is that it's easy for them to finance a car versus a home loan. So you find that a young person earns 20,000-30,000 rand a month, and they go and they want to buy a property, and they get told that, well, either you don't have a good credit history. Based on that, give it a bit of time. That young person then goes and buys a car. And once they do that, when they come back to apply for a home loan 6 months later, they say, well, now you've got a car. We don't think you can afford both. You know, so it's one of those. But
It's tragic.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
Do you feel sometimes that if we just had a little growth in the economy, it would also help?
I do.
I mean, it's not the best, it's not the most conducive environment to people, first of all, making enough money to be able to own even their primary residence, but then to be able to invest in other properties.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that we see now, Gareth, is like I found out last week, I saw in the papers that Pick n Pay is going to start selling food on credit. Now, if that is not indicative of a bigger problem, I mean, that what that means, and I mean, I'm going to make a very simple example. It means the ham that you're going to buy now in September, you'll be paying for in December, okay? That is a huge financial burden to carry as a person. Yes, it answers your immediate question of how do you feed your family now, but it means you're digging yourself into a deeper and deeper debt. And the investment in property, I mean, one of the things Riley made me aware of is I think the top 10 most richest people in the world, or 10% of the richest people in the world, have invested in property on some level or another. So it is sort of, as you said, Gareth, a sort of first point of call, and could be easier than you trying to start some big conglomerate. Just start with where you are. Look at the scenario of where you are.
And Riley, you said this too, that the only real good debt you can get is property debt in terms of bonds and home loans and that kind of thing, because at least that, you know the term, you will end up with an asset at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, so they say capital is born in property, and that's quite true, because it's one of the things that actually the banks will ask you, even if you want to start your own business and you're looking to raise big monies, they'll ask you what assets have you got. And one of the on the list of assets, one of the ones that actually become attractive is some kind of a property. So certainly I will still encourage people that have opportunities to be able to get involved in getting good, what I call good debt, which is basically debt to be able to finance a real estate transaction. because I think you know, and it's one of those assets that in general will last longer, and just on average, the appreciation value of properties is higher than most assets that you can ever invest in.
The word's collateral, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm very excited that we've launched a range of podcasts. I think it's the first of its kind in Africa, a range of podcasts on property. I hope this doesn't suddenly cause a whole lot of people to go and take 21 million rand loan, because we're not always sure we can pay those back. Certainly, the podcast is a starting point, and the fact that you're doing these learnerships, that you're providing an opportunity for people who want to study real estate to do so, that's a terrific move. So if you want to advance your own property portfolio, you want to learn from the life of Raleigh Mampwele or from Lerato's other guests who have interesting insights into home loans, into financing, into gearing, into all of these things that will help to put the whole picture together for you. You don't want to miss these podcasts. We're very proud to be able to offer them to the audience and to you especially if it's something that you're interested in. Raleigh, thank you so much. And Lerato, we hope to speak to you again soon.
Yes, of course, Gareth. I always enjoy talking to you. Remember, the podcast is on every Wednesday from 10 until 11 on cliffcentral.com.
But because it's a podcast, you can get it
anytime. So anytime, wherever you are.
Go back to episode 1 and listen to all of them from there on. If you're interested in property, this is the simplest, easiest, cheapest way for you to start learning about it and to get involved.
Yes, indeed.
Fantastic. Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you for having us. Thank you very much. CliffCentral.com.